first to the party and last to leave. What do you say we party together? This is Sportsnet Today. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It is time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Shaw Ali. Let's go. Sunday, baby. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. The real best fantasy sports talk show in the world today. Real. And this other award stuff. Forget about it. Anyway, we got baseball today. We got football. We got hockey. We got a lot going on today's show. There is a ton. Listen, I'm not going to bury the lead. We got kicker and defense rankings coming up. Stay tuned. Stay tuned, folks. Kicker and DST. Who's ready? You ready, show? Kicker.
Meh.
A little bit later.
I'm sure. Who's going to be in the top five for kickers next year? Will it be Tyler Bass?
Dun, dun, dun.
I'll say this, Andy. Any day we can do the fantasy show, after the Leafs win, it always makes me happy. Okay, we've done that plenty of times in the past because we're on Sunday mornings. Leafs usually, not always, but usually play on Saturday night. And last night, I don't know how much of that game you managed to catch, but that was one of the craziest hockey games. I don't think it's hyperbole to say maybe I have ever seen. In my life, maybe. Like, the Leafs went into that third period leading 7-2, okay? And they won that game 10-7. 10-7, Andy.
Incredible.
That's crazy.
Incredible. I love the Chris Cuthbert line. Welcome to the 1980s.
Yeah.
Oh. It was the highest scoring game they've been in since they played Gretzky in the Oilers in 86. That was crazy. That was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it was so much fun. here's one thing. 10 goals, and I think it ended up being like, I don't know, it was like 15 combined points for Matthews and Marner and all these Bunting and so on too. But John Tavares still could not register a point last night amidst 10 goals. I don't know if that's how you know you're snake bit, right? When Marner scores 4 and, you know, Bunting gets a goal and 4 assists and Nylander scores and Matthew scores and Mikheyev scores to stop the bleeding in the third period. I don't know. It's just some crazy stuff happened last night, and John Tavares still couldn't score. Which that's when that's when you know things are not going your way.
So I would love to know what is more difficult or more rare, a 17 goal game in 2022 in the National Hockey League, or being a top 6 forward and not getting a point in a 17-goal hockey game where your team scores 10. Yeah, they've got to be pretty close.
Yeah, it's got to be close.
It's got to be pretty close odds-wise.
I know people like to, you know, it's funny. Like, I think you look at the different scores. I mean, Saturday is always very busy across the NHL, right? Just tons of goals, tons of points, and tons of different scores. But you look at like the duality of man, right? Rangers and Penguins, two of the hottest teams in the NHL. Both teams probably going to go to the playoffs over in the Metropolitan Division. The Penguins won that game 1-0. 1-0 for the Penguins, okay? Evgeny Malkin scored the only goal in that entire game. Shesterkin, who's probably, I mean, I guess Tristan Jarry is probably, they're both probably Vezina candidates. We talked to Nick Elberga last week or a couple weeks ago on that, and he named both of those guys. Both of them played very well. Penguins won 1-0. I think goaltending in Toronto was, or in Detroit, was optional last night. 4 goaltenders played in that game, Andy, okay? Jack Campbell, Peter Mrazek, Alex Nedeljkovic, and Thomas Greiss. And Jack Campbell had the highest save percentage, and his save percentage was 800.
Oh, gross. Gross.
That's terrible.
I'll say this. I don't know the official statistics behind it. I don't know the percentages. But it just seems like if you have that high scoring game, the next game you score, we're going to see Leafs Capitals, which you can watch on Sportsnet, of course, on Monday, like no goals. Like there's going to be like one, it's going to be like 2-1. I would take whatever the under is set at total goals in that game, I would take under. And if you can go team-wise, take the under for the Maple Leafs because they used it all up.
It's true. Doesn't it feel like that happens more often than it doesn't, right? Like it just,
yeah.
It just, I don't know. I don't know if that's like a crazy sports fan take that I wholeheartedly believe in, but I do. Honest to goodness, I do. It's true though. It always does feel like that, but yeah, it's crazy. You know what also is crazy when it comes to Campbell and the goaltending? I feel like, I don't know, maybe like a month ago, like where are we? We're at the end of February. So, yeah, maybe like at the new year, let's say, maybe as the calendar turned over to January. Remember there was a bunch of games that got postponed because of like attendance issues. They're postponed basically to now, right? Like they're kind of making up a bunch of these games around now. And the conversation around Jack Campbell was, how much is he going to make next year? Is it going to be $5 million a year? Is it going to be $6 million a year? It felt like it was going to be a lot of money and that he was probably going to price himself out of playing in Toronto in the near future, especially next year, considering he's a UFA at the end of the season. And boy, he has not played very well. Like I don't want to lay the whole thing at his feet, like only at him. I mean, certainly with Muzzin out, it's been a little harder too. But still, boy, Andy, Jack Campbell.
You can't put it all on Muzzin. That's the thing.
It's just crazy that like now the conversation is now revolving around, boy, is Jack Campbell, like, do the Leafs even want Jack Campbell to re-sign here next year? That's kind of the tenor. It's like the conversation has gone so wildly back and forth. It blows my mind that we're where we are today versus where we are like a month ago.
And I wonder, Sho, if it can still swing back the other way, because we've seen the two extremes, right, for Jack Campbell. We've seen him be at the top, literally at the top of all goaltenders statistic categories, couple months of the year. At the best goals against, best save percent, most saves, all that. Now we're seeing him, while the Leafs still winning, still doing well to differing degrees, now you see him go the other way. So I wonder, and we know goaltending can be so much against like pitching in baseball, right? And kickers in football. It's such a mental aspect to the game that you can't put your finger on. We don't know how this type of adversity affects the inside of Jack Campbell, of another person. We don't know. Maybe he'll shake it off. Maybe he'll rise up. Maybe the month of March, he'll switch it back. Because we've seen him do it, we know he can. The question was, could he do that for a full season? The answer right now is no, but it doesn't mean he can't finish strong. And I'll tell you, Sho, Leafs ain't scoring 10 goals a game in the playoffs. So you got to figure this goaltending thing out one way or another. And if you're stuck in a committee, we know more often than not, you don't really have any goaltender.
No, it's true. Well, you know how the NHL has changed in the last, 5 years or so, 7 years, let's say. I mean, I know like goaltending tandems have existed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just been...
You need a guy.
At the end of the day, you need
someone to rise up.
Yeah.
Right, you need someone to take the reins as the main goalie.
Remember when the Blues won the Cup? I guess it was like they won the Cup, I want to say, against Boston in Game 7. I think like the day before the Raptors won the championship. I think it was like on a Wednesday they won the Stanley Cup and the Raptors won on a Thursday or so, it was something like that.
Right.
And going into those playoffs, the Blues, I think it was Jake Allen and Jordan Binnington kind of splitting time, or it seemed like Jake Allen was the 1A to Binnington's 1B. And then, of course, we know by the end of those playoffs, Binnington had taken over and he played fantastically. Kind of same for the Capitals, sort of, when they went into their, you know, when they beat the Knights in their first season of existence, right? I think it was Grubauer and Holtby. And, you know, to a lesser degree, because this kind of was a strange situation, but the situation with Matt Murray, I think it was, and I don't know if it was Tristan Jari was the other guy at that point, or if it was still Fleury, but either way, they had two goalies as well, and it's funny, because by the end of all those situations, it was one guy getting the majority of the starts in the playoffs, right? I still think, with the goaltending on this roster the way it is right this second, I still think it's going to be Jack Campbell, or it'll have to be Jack Campbell. You know, I don't know, I mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury, maybe he's available in a trade, right? The trade deadline is less than a month to go in the NHL, particularly late this year also, right? So maybe Fleury ends up being the, I don't know, 1A, 1B. Like, tell me you wouldn't feel a little better about having like a battle-tested goalie like Fleury, despite his age, in net for the Maple Leafs this playoff run.
Well, yeah, you want that with still Jack Campbell there. Because, again, I'm not convinced the guy's washed. I don't think we can go to that other full extreme. He's struggled mightily, of course, right? But you look at the fact that, again, he's done it. Does competition help Jack Campbell? Does it hinder him? Does it help take some pressure off? Again, we don't know inside. That's the fascinating part of it. It's still, despite all the statistics and algorithms and all that people can put together, it still comes down to human beings and how you react in certain situations, and that we can't put our finger on because we're not Jack Campbell. So I wanted, like, if you're just looking at it from a Maple Leaf fan, yeah. Do I want a guy who's won a Stanley Cup, who's done it, who's been able to do it in multiple locations, play at a high level? Yes. I think that would make a ton of sense. Question, as always, is what's the price? What's to do with the salary cap? And boy, show, I'll tell you, Sunday morning at 8:10 Eastern, I'm not going to do that math. I probably won't do that math at any time of the day.
I was going to say, you won't do it now. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it doesn't matter what time it is. You're not
doing that math. No. That is a delegation job. That is, we get our crack staff at
Fair
Sportsnet Stats or whatever to do that. That's terrific to do that side. But that is a heck of a game. Just from an entertainment standpoint, big picture aside, man, that was just absolute. I know you're a fan of sports chaos, and that was as chaotic as you can get.
I'll say this, just as we wrap up on this conversation, if you missed out on watching, so Sportsnet does the watch-alongs, right? Specifically for Leafs games. They do it for a lot of things, but for the Leafs games, they've been doing it since the playoffs last year with Dangle, right? With Steve Dangle. Mm-hmm. And you can watch it on Sportsnet's YouTube page. And I'll say this, I think, you know, if you don't already like Dangle, it probably is not for you. But if you like chaos and Dangle, if you don't go back and watch that third period, I think they actually did put it on the YouTube page, like Dangle's kind of little, like his little box in the corner of the screen as the game was going on. If you go on back and watch that third period, I promise you, you will be entertained. That is one of the funniest things I've seen all year. It is truly one of the funniest things. Like, he is so good. Like, I think you have to watch it. I think if you're a Leafs fan, because I think the emotions that go through that video, I think are the emotions that every Leafs fan felt when they were up 7-2, and I think they scored like the Red Wings scored four straight goals in the third period before Mikheyev kind of stopped things at the end there. I forgot what the exact sequence was last night, but yeah, the third period with Dangle on YouTube for Sportsnet's YouTube page is one of the best things I've seen all season.
And now we see, again, what the Maple Leafs do going forward to this. What happens? How do you deal with the goaltending situation? But a fun one last night, that's for sure. We'll get some NFL updates as well as our guest today, Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com. Although, show, there is no labor agreement, we all hope and pray that there will be baseball this year. We're assuming at some point there will be baseball. We hope that the MLB doesn't once again fall on their face and get in their own way. No one can self-sabotage like Major League Baseball. They are the absolute king of it. If you see, like, I just finished, show, watching the new season of Love is Blind, my wife and I. Human garbage. It's tremendous trash. I love it. But the self-sabotaging with those people is the equivalent of Major League Baseball in sports getting in its way. Things are great. Oh, but I'm not sure about this. Let's go on. Let's strike. Let's lock out. No one self-sabotages like Major League Baseball. So we'll get to that in a minute. But the Nick Pollock from PitcherList.com is going to join us at the top of the next hour. We still have to get fantasy baseball draft ready, show. Okay? You have to be prepared because these labor negotiations, whatever, can end, can get resolved. And next thing you know, the modified spring training's coming, whatever the season's like, and you're going to have to be ready to go sooner than later for your fantasy baseball draft. So Nick Pollock is going to help us with that. We're going to also get through free agent quarterback candidates. Show, this is, we talked about chaos in the hockey game last night. Oh, the chaotic structure that could be the NFL and who's quarterback where. It can just be complete nonsense. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But we did our favorite sports movie Domino's Pizza giveaway last week. And you picked a winner, right?
Yeah, we did. We picked a winner. Adam is our winner and emailed him the code, right? I texted him, got his contact info, emailed him the code. So congratulations to Adam. And the only reason I bring it up is because, well, first of all, I hope Adam is enjoying his pizza or did at some point between last Sunday and today. Or, hey, the codes don't really expire, so use them whenever you want, people, right? Yeah. But Adam picked Bull Durham. And just to kind of wrap up what we were doing last week, I just couldn't help but think of this clip, one of my favorite clips from the immortal movie, baseball movie, Bull Durham.
Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi,
get in
five Mississippi, six Mississippi, seven Mississippi, eight Mississippi, nine Mississippi, ten Mississippi.
You guys, you lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. Do you know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. Lollygaggers.
What does that
make
you?
The worst thing you could call somebody.
Larry? Lollygagger, sir.
Like, just to make it out to seem like that is like the worst thing you can do. I haven't seen Bull Durham in ages. I got to go back and watch it. That is such, oh, that is such a good one. That is such a good one. I love that.
I think one of my favorite parts of that clip too, Andy, is that they're like, he threatens to fine them. And he's like, anyone who's not in this shower in 5 seconds or whatever, he's going to get fined $100. And you're like,
oh no.
My God, what a lot of money. But again, I know it kind of dates it a little bit. And, you know, the time it was filmed in and took place in, but boy, it just, you think about, like, it's just funny because we're talking about the money issues players face. And I know it's like something like the majority of players are not millionaires in Major League Baseball. But it's just funny to think that for like a professional athlete in 2022, $100 probably means nothing, right?
No,
so it always kind of makes me laugh whenever they say stuff like that.
Yeah, especially in the majors. It's no Draft Day show, but it is a darn good movie, I will say.
Is it a rom-com? It is, right? Kind of. Bull Durham.
Yeah, they got your romance, all those ones of like little romancy stuff put in there. A little bit. I can't remember what it was, but
I was trying to.
Yeah, there's got to be.
I was just trying to convince my wife to watch it, and I think she's big rom com fan. So I think, and I don't think she's ever even heard of Bull Durham. So I think that might be a good next weekend watch. I think.
Just keep playing it if she's not saying, "Where's the rom?" Say it's coming. It's later. And then at the end, the rom is coming. It's right there.
There's some calm in the meantime. It's all good.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Major League Baseball labor updates. Now, show for the listeners, believe it or not, we are not seasoned, trained, and certified labor negotiators, professionals, anything like that. So we thought, you know what? For the latest MLB labor updates, we should let a professional talk about it, right?
That's correct. Yes. Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated had this little stand-up from last night. He kind of summarizes some issues here, and then we can kind of get into it for a couple more minutes afterwards. But this is Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated on the latest from the MLB labor negotiations.
The Major League Baseball lockout has lasted 86 days and just about as many disagreements. Those disagreements include the competitive balance tax, whether issues such as arbitration eligibility and revenue sharing are even negotiable, whether to use a federal mediator or not, and now the latest disagreement heaped upon a pile of disagreements, whether Monday is a true deadline or not. The owners insist that it is. They say without an agreement by Monday that opening day scheduled for March 31st is lost. The players believe it's not a hard deadline. On this, they can agree. It will take a dramatic turn of events this weekend to get an agreement by Monday.
Yeah, I think tomorrow, it's crazy to think, Andy, tomorrow they've been insisting all along that, like Tom says in that clip, you know, there's not going to be, if they don't have an agreement by tomorrow, it's not that there's not going to be baseball played at all. It's just that we probably won't get 162 games, which honestly is not the worst thing in the world, in my opinion. But
I kind of like the shortened season.
Yeah. Like, I'm not advocating for a 60 game season. I'm not. But I think 162 games, if it's like 140 games or 130 games, I don't think that's going to. I don't think that's going to kill the sport of baseball personally, but I do. I have read and from insiders like Tom or insiders like Jeff Passan from ESPN, who comes on the station pretty often, right? A lot of stuff like, you know, the players are united and they felt very disrespected by the owner's offer, the counter proposal yesterday, because the players felt they made significant concessions on things like arbitration years and percentage of players eligible for arbitration and Super 2 players and all sorts of things, and the owners didn't really budge on their end. So I don't know. It doesn't really sound like a whole ton of progress was made on the 26th. We'll see. They're supposed to reconvene on the 27th today at 1 p.m. Eastern. So I guess we'll see. But I mean, it does feel like it's a pretty large gap between today and tomorrow to actually have a season start on time, right?
So if you cannot agree on when a deadline is, that is not a good sign. Like, it's Monday. No, it's not. It's like, really? You can't even agree. You know what? Change it to March 1st. Put it on the Tuesday. There. I just solved it. It's a Tuesday now. That's the deadline. And then you're good, right? Pick a time, 4 in the afternoon, and you're good to go. And that's it. It's absolutely ridiculous. But I'm glad we had Tom explain it, and I'll go over the tax thing he was called. And in the end, fans want to watch baseball. If you don't give them baseball, they'll watch something else. And we saw what happened after the strike in the 90s. All of a sudden, you know, overlooking of steroids and the super home run fest that erupted in the late 90s, which brought baseball back to prominence, happened. People will move on. They will do something else with their time. And there's a lot more to do and a lot more distractions in 2022 than there was in 94. So that's where baseball really has to try to figure it out. But again, nobody self-sabotages like Major League Baseball. And we'll see. We'll see. We'll talk to Nick Pollock to get you ready for your fantasy baseball drafts, to be prepared, folks. Okay? You be prepared, then you can catch your other league mates. We're like, oh no, I didn't think there'd be baseball. And then you get them. And then you win your league. And you can gloat and hold it over them forever, which is really the whole point of playing fantasy with friends, right?
It's true. Yeah, you know what? It's true. It doesn't matter what fantasy sport it is, football, basketball, baseball, hockey. It's all about winning and rubbing it in your friends' faces.
Yes.
And that's what you should be living for. Agreed.
That's the goal. That's the point. Really just being better than your friends. That's what it's all about. Some NFL news, nothing too crazy, show, but I thought, you know what, we'll go through some of the news and notes. Ian Thomas signed a 3-year extension with the Carolina Panthers. Ooh. Now, that should excite no one. Statistically, he's the best. He's one of the best blocking tight ends in all of football. So that's why they.
What does that mean, though? What does that mean statistically? Well, it means he can blocking.
Yeah. I think it's tied into like the running game, and like, but when Christian McCaffrey is in there, he's like really good too. So you know what, however it works out, Ian Thomas got a $16.5 million 3-year extension. $8 million of that is guaranteed, which in the NFL show of course means that it's an $8 million contract, because after that, the guaranteed money's gone, you are guaranteed nothing in the NFL at all. It just goes away.
The cap and contracts and all that stuff, as we've learned in sports even in sports where you get paid every penny of whatever your contract turns out to be, but especially in the NFL, it's all fake. It's all, you know what I mean? Like, they manipulate it in whatever way they want. Like, they can say whatever the cap is, but you know what? There's always another date by which they can change things or move things around. Although I will say this, I in your article, that article we're going to discuss next about like the free agent quarterbacks and like the landing spots and so on, Matt Ryan has a cap hit, Andy, of $48.662 million in 2022. Like to put it in perspective, Sam Darnold has a cap hit of 18.8. Baker has a cap hit of 18.8. Goff, who is making a gargantuan amount of money, has a cap hit of 31.1. Matt Ryan has a cap hit of $48 million. Like, that is an insane amount of money for such a bad team to be devoting towards one player. That's crazy.
Just absolutely nuts. I like, so when I hear that, I either think of the Krusty the Clown grunt, like, or the Packers color commentator from the playoff loss that we... who was just beside himself. Andy's doing like, there it is. That's my favorite. That's got to be a hotkey forever. Then Matt Ryan, too, he's doing, like, Tide commercials with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I saw that. And Ice Cube.
Great. And Ice Cube. That. Ice Cube or not Stone Ice Cold.
Ice-T.
Ice-T. Because he's like, Matty Ice. And he's like, oh, good on. That's not the quarterback I would personally choose to represent my brand. But, hey, maybe the Tide guy is a Falcons fan. I don't know.
That's it true. Works. I remember. I think those commercials aired initially with just without any athletes in them. Like it was just Stone Cold and Ice-T, and then I was like, "Oh, this is kind of fun." And then they started putting in Matt Ryan. And I was like, "I kind of like this less." oddly enough,
I don't like this as much. Yeah, it's not quite as good. There's been restructured contracts all across the league too. Jack Conklin with the Browns. It was coming off an injury. It's turned in from a $12 million guarantee in this upcoming season to $8 million guarantees and $4 million in incentives.
Sexy.
So, and then that frees
sexy
up
move.
Well, and then it frees up like $4 million in cap space. So again, to your point, Joe, the salary cap number is a figment of the imagination. They did, I forget who else it was, they moved someone else. It might have been on the Packers, and it was like, all right, well, you're gonna get paid the same, but now it's a signing bonus. Like, but he already signed. So you can turn a guy who signed like a contract 2 years ago, his money into a signing bonus, and then get the cap money you need. So it's all nonsense.
That's why like the kind of demise of the Los Angeles Rams, I think, is pretty overblown. I know they have a lot of free agents, like they still have to make a Von Miller some kind of substantive contract offer, and you know, will Aaron Donald retire? Will Sean McVay retire? Sure, those are all like legitimate questions. But you know, a lot of people were like, "Oh, well, they have so many free agents, and they don't have a lot of cap space." It was something insane. Like if they restructured just like some of their top six players, their contracts of these guys. So if you restructured a partial part of Stafford's deal and Andrew Whitworth's deal, and certainly. You know, you signed OBJ to a small contract as well, which probably is going to happen now that he tore his ACL and all sorts of things, right? Like if you do all of those things, which I feel like are made possible by the fact they just won the Super Bowl, then they could easily run it back with almost the exact same team next year. And I don't think that's been talked about enough, because a lot of people were like, well, they lost all these people on the coaching staff, and Stafford's going to lose X amount of his targets, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, right? Well, if they essentially just replace OBJ for the regular season, and probably for the playoffs as well, let's be real. Like if they replace him with like some other receiver who is just another WR2, I feel like they'll probably be okay. Yeah, hey, if it is Van Jefferson, I'm completely on board with that, because he was great in limited action this year. But it's just they're probably going to add someone. They're probably going to add someone, because Woods is still on the bend and OBJ is not going to play until at least, the playoffs essentially, right? So they have to add somebody. But are they going to add like one of the top free agent wideouts? Probably not at that price range, right?
No, I don't think you need to either. Like, yeah, you elevate Van Jefferson, who showcased himself in varying degrees. He was banged up a little bit. I have all the confidence in Van Jefferson. Yeah, Robert Woods, what's his timeline to return? Now, you can't really fill it unless you get a bit of a flyer in the draft, because you don't have a pick to what, round 4 or 5.
So
you get a middle, third type of receiver, like a middle ground free agent, third type of wideout. There's like Russell Gage is there. You know, you get Russell Gage for pretty cheap, I would think, from the Falcons. He's a free agent, Russell Gage.
He'd be fine. He'll like, that's exactly the kind of move I'm talking about.
Yeah. Russell Gage will do it for like $2.5 million. Come on. We'll talk to him. We'll get you for $2 million, LA. He'll
nice.
Do it.
There you go.
You know, it's fine. You can manipulate that as much as you want. Matt Nagy going back to Kansas City. And what I think is a weird dynamic show, because he was, remember, offensive coordinator. Then he was deemed a genius and went to Chicago, where he was eventually de-genius, very much so. And now he's back as a senior assistant / quarterbacks coach with the guy who replaced him, Eric Bieniemy, as the offensive coordinator. So that's kind of a weird dynamic. Your old boss coming back and you're his boss. I don't know. It seems kind of strange.
The bloom has almost... I didn't even almost. It has completely fallen off the rose for Matt Nagy, has it not? Like has it not fallen off, but Bieniemy is, I think, year in and year out viewed as one of the premier head coaching offense options in the whole league, right? Bieniemy is Like, I you know what I mean? I know people, you know, people often say, show me a good coach, you know, I'll show you a good quarterback, for the most part, right? And I think you could probably say that in Kansas City, considering how good Patrick Mahomes is, as we know. But at the same time, like, Eric Bieniemy makes things a lot easier for him, right? And, you know, schemes things up in a way that...
too.
Yeah, like, he puts them in a position to succeed. So I can't imagine what I'm saying, that, like, you know, Bieniemy loses any of the play calling, like, you know, options, abilities in Kansas City, even if Nagy is coming back, right?
Maybe it's a bit of a failsafe for Andy Reid, who can then be like, all right, well, if Bieniemy gets a coaching job next year, you got the old guy who's ready to come right back in. Maybe that's it.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, he's way over, Bieniemy's way overdue for a shot at head coach, a head coaching position. So at some point, you'd think he would do that. And maybe Nagy's the failsafe there. So, yeah, not a lot of NFL news, but thought we'd just update you there. All right, we're going to take the break. When we come back, we're going to polish off our position rankings, look ahead for kicker and defense, who to look at for your 2022 fantasy football season. We'll also get into free agent quarterback candidates. And folks, I'm telling you, the way that this group is structured, the possible what-ifs and the impacts to the teams they could go to and leave for your fantasy football team, it's pretty extreme. So we're going to take a look at that top of the next hour, fantasy baseball conversation with Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com. A lot more program coming up on The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back and rolling on The Fantasy Show. Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. And folks, we are also in the podcast world. Now, if you haven't, you can subscribe on Spotify, on, what is it, Show? Apple? We got Apple?
Yeah. Spotify, Apple, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find The Fantasy Show.
There you go. Just yell, do we got Apple?
You're like 1,000 years
awful
old,
man.
No one's subscribing now. Good God.
Yes, you awful man. We do have it. Why do you keep yelling Apple?
Oh man.
Never had an Apple product, Show. Always Android for this fella.
That's kind of, apple's a kind of fruit, right? That's a fruit or something.
That's a, I eat an apple every day. That's a true story. Eat it every day. But I do not own any of the electronic products. And damn it, I never will.
Aren't you, like, the only person in your family who also, like, doesn't own one? Like, I think your wife does, and
yes,
you know, and
she
so
does,
on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need to join. Yep. Join us. One of us, Andy. One of us.
Never. Mainly because the Mac stuff, it's kind of tricky to use. Doesn't have the right mouse. I you know what? It's too much for me. The mouse is weird. The thing, no.
Santos, I'm pretty sure, doesn't have an Apple product either, I think.
That's right. Android, he put in our text chat right now for the show, Android for life. That's right. NWO and Android for life. Actually, I'm not that passionate about it. I don't care. I just don't want to learn the Apple stuff.
Fair.
I don't want to convert either. All right. We'll be quick with this one, but we have to make sure we do our due diligence on the kicker and DST side of fantasy football, Show, because it is one of people say, kickers, and then Rich Eisen, you know, kickers are people too, and all that. But there can be a time, Show, and there was several times this fantasy season and every year, where you got a good kicker that can win you a week. I had a couple times this year where my kicker went off for like 15 or 18 fantasy points, and boy, that covers up a lot of warts if your WR3 has a stinker. So it's not something you obviously ever spend a high pick on, but you want to have those reliable guys.
Well, you know what? I think that the only guy who I think he would have taken, like, for the most part every year, in the last, 4 years or so, maybe a little longer, Justin Tucker has usually been one, if not the first guy, one of the top two or three guys that goes off
That's
the board in the last couple of rounds. So, yeah, for the most part, right?
Yeah.
And he was a top three kicker again this year, 162 points. So I feel like he's a top option who produced like a top option. But everyone else essentially are guys who you probably could have picked up off the waiver wire at some point, right? Like if you, like Daniel Carlson, From the Raiders, Nick Folk from the Patriots, Chris Boswell from the Steelers, and Matt Gay from the Rams at 1, 2, 4, and 5, because Tucker was at 3. All four of those guys, you probably could have gotten off waivers at some point.
Oh, especially Nick Folk. Like, that's...
Oh, yeah.
That's one of those like, 37. Like, and when we're looking ahead, am I going to be looking to acquire Nick Folk? No. I don't think that's... That's a guy, again, you can wait late or at that age. And kickers are so weird, Show. You can see, guy can be going lights out, and then it just leaves him. He starts double doinking, missing, whatever, and it just goes. And it can go at any time. Like Greg Joseph from Minnesota. He used to be for the Browns. He stinks. And he's still not very good. But he was sixth. I'll tell you this, Show, real quick. So 2019, okay. I was at Cleveland Browns training camp. Mm-hmm. In beautiful Berea, Ohio, God's country. And it was, and I could not stand Greg Joseph. This guy, he was terrible. They brought him back for some reason. And he was down the line, you know, you're there, and players would come down, and we were with the Browns backers, so we got the premier seating and all that at the training camp. It was an awesome experience. But players would come down and sign some merchandise. Baker ran by, hit my hand. It was amazing. Still haven't watched it. But Greg Joseph was coming by, Show. And I had a football and like a miniature like helmet to like get signed, and Greg Joseph came, and then they also gave you a piece of paper, just like a Browns thing, for like an autograph page. I pulled back my football and helmet and handed him the paper to sign, and I was just like, you're not signing anything good, Greg Joseph. Not me.
Did he sign
it? He got cut. He did. I didn't say don't sign. You're not good. But he was like a very nice guy and all that. And but I'm like, you are, no, not, don't, get away from my souvenir football. But
so,
can you
so
see
what,
him,
what'd you do with that? What'd you do with the autograph? Where is it?
Garbage. Garbage. It didn't make it out of the facility, Show. I threw it in the trash on the way out. I was like, no, Greg Joseph. And now he's the sixth best fantasy guy.
Can I ask you a question, real quick question, Andy?
Yeah.
You mentioned Ohio is God's country. I just want to double check. You were born here, right? Like,
yes.
You are Canadian, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's what I thought. Just to double check.
By birth, but Cleveland and Ohio is definitely a second home to me.
Okay. All right.
I've been recognized more in Ohio than I have in Toronto.
I will never go to Cleveland.
You
never.
Are going to Cleveland. You're
never,
going to Canton
ever.
In August with me. You're going to Canton in August with me.
Canton is not Cleveland.
It's an hour away.
We're going to take the bypass around Cleveland.
I'm going to detour us, and you're coming to Canton, Ohio with me. Well, hey, folks, by the way, we will keep you up to date on that big fantasy expo show. We're going to be there to probably do a live episode of the fantasy show, but we'll keep you up to date as the months get closer to that August 8th. It's going to be a very exciting time for us there. But we look at the kickers here. Okay, let's look at the top 12 producers. So number one was Daniel Carlson, 174 points. Number 12, Harrison Butker for the Chiefs at 140. And Tucker, I want to say, Show, Tucker and Butker, what, that kind of rhymes, would have been probably one of the top two or three kickers taken off the board. So Tucker delivered, Butker overall, not so much.
Yeah, the Kansas City offense, especially in the first, because you know how fantasy football is, right? Like the actual season, like the regular season ends in what? Week 12, week 11, week 12, thereabouts, right?
Yeah, so depending on your league,
Yeah, depending on your league. Maybe slightly later. Again, depends on your league, right?
The extra game.
The extra game. The people do wild card games sometimes in the playoffs in their fantasy leagues, or maybe they're 2 week finals. Anyways, there are a bunch of different configurations, that kind of stuff. But still, if you're only counting like what 12, let's be generous, call it 13 weeks of fantasy football. That means for, I would say, the first, what, 6 to 7 weeks of that schedule, the Chiefs kind of struggled a little bit, right? And obviously they got all the way to the very deep in the playoffs towards the end. But, I mean, you know, if you're only counting regular season stats, then, yeah, Butker really struggled. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Zuerlein at 12, he finished, actually, he and Butker had the exact same amount of points, 140 points.
Greg the leg.
Both of them were, I want to say, pretty highly taken in the preseason rankings and so on, right?
Well, yeah. Zuerlein, I think just based on name recognition, he's been on a bit of a decline. But again, he's only 34. A couple years ago, he was the hottest kicker. So,
great
you know, Mason Crosby was another one. Mason Crosby got in, was horrible. And he finished 15th. He was just inconsistent all over the place for the Packers. So, you know, Tyler Bass for Buffalo finished 11th. Hopkins had, it says multi teams for Hopkins, you know, like Jake Elliott. Now, I wonder, because of how, like, just how much media hype he got, Evan McPherson, the rookie out of Cincinnati, finished 7th, 154 points. You know, he was like, oh, guess we're going to the conference championships. Like, he just became a bit of a folk hero. I wonder how high he goes next year for a team like Cincinnati.
Yeah, like maybe his playoff heroics kind of shoot him up the rankings a little bit. I like to think that doesn't happen for a lot of positions, but I could see it happening for kicker because kicker, like it's a goalies to a certain degree, right? Like, you know, people always are like, goalies are voodoo, and they say all that kind of stuff. It does to an extent feel like that's true for kickers and defenses as well. I think like you want that sweet spot of offenses that are either, well, if you have an offense that's just out of this world by sheer statistics of people being down in the red zone and so on, you'll probably be okay with that guy, which is why, you know, over the years, Zuerlein and Butker and Tucker have all been good, right? Mm-hmm. But you want that sweet spot of offenses that are good enough to get near down into or near the red zone, but not score a touchdown, essentially, right? Like, you want offenses that are going to crap out in the red zone so they can trot out the field goal kicker, which is exactly what the Raiders and Patriots did last year, right? Exactly. Yeah. Almost to a T. So and the Steelers did that a lot, too, right? Because the Big Ben's noodle arm. And, hey, maybe depending on who the quarterback for the Steelers is next year, because I still don't think it's going to be Mason Rudolph. I think it's going to be either a free agent or a rookie. And if that's the case, maybe you do want Chris Boswell in the top five again next year because he's going to have tons of opportunity to kick field goals if this rookie or free agent addition likely don't, you know, they can't get it done on a consistent basis.
So Mike Tomlin said if the season were to start today, Mason Rudolph would be the starter. Let's go.
Well, yeah, because free agency hasn't happened yet.
Let's go, please. Oh, him or Dwayne Haskins. Actually, I think I'd prefer Mason Rudolph to see him fail. Very unlikable. Very unlikable individual.
Andy, I can't wait for the Steelers to finish above the Browns in next year in the division. Oh boy, that's going to be the
Mason Rudolph. No,
that's one of the funniest things.
I'll tackle Mason Rudolph myself. I'll tackle him. He's a big square head. He's like an idiot, Mason Rudolph. You know, you look at the perfect example. I think show is a guy like Daniel Carlson, because just like you said with the Raiders, the offense can be moved. They could score in bunches, but not all the time, and can leave you there. And I think Carlson might still be, to a certain degree, maybe overlooked over those bigger names like we talked about, Tucker, Butker, Greg the Leg, if people don't do their research. But a guy like Carlson, 27 years old, things can change on kicker side, but like Carlson is going to be a top target of mine because of age and because of situation that the Raiders are still probably going to be similar in, and an okay offense, but not one that's going to be jumping all the time. Like, you know, Matt Gay, fifth overall, that's a nice solid pick, but it comes a case in a fantasy draft show when you're looking at kicker, to me, where, all right, where in the draft are you at when you start thinking about kicker? And usually someone makes the plunge and then you get on a bit of a run. But like if I'm in the draft those later rounds, I'm like, okay, I could get the best kicker available, or I could get that fourth wide receiver that I'm probably never going to use. That's when I look to jump in and get my kicker.
My personal strategy for kicker and for DST is that, let's say you're in, I guess, again, it depends on the size of your league and what your bench spots are like and all that kind of stuff. But let's say you're like in a 15-round draft. I will not take a kicker or a defense until the 14th and 15th rounds.
You know, the very end.
It does not matter to me who goes first, or if they, like, there's always someone, and especially in my kind of home league that we've been doing for a decade plus, there's always someone who drafts a defense and kicker like in the 10th and 11th rounds. You know what I mean? Like, it's someone
cute.
Someone always takes that guy, and sometimes it works out great, like the years when the Legion of Boom were available for the defenses, or when Greg the Leg was killing it in Los Angeles and so on. He was taking those guys. And again, it happened again this year. On principle, I will not take a kicker or defense until the bitter, bitter end. Because I think in some leagues too, like especially on ESPN and Yahoo, like the actual app and like the way it makes you draft, I think your league, again, settings may depend on this, but some leagues allow you to take like allow you to finish the draft without taking a defense or a kicker. You know what I mean? Like it allows you to finish the draft, and you can just not take a defense or kicker, and in your last two rounds, take an extra running back or take an extra wide receiver or whatever you want. And then before the beginning of the season, you just drop someone who ends up not being super important, and then you can like just pick up someone off of waivers. I've seen that happen, but I also know a lot of leagues are set up that. And our league is like this, where you must complete the minimum for positional eligibility, which means that you have to have at least one kicker and at least one defense, right? So if that's the case, and I think that is for a lot of people, I will not do it until the last two rounds.
Well, and if we look at defense, and it's so hard to predict these defensive scores, right? Because, well, was it last year or the year before the Patriots were number one, Joe? Get confused with the
timeline. The year before,
where they were like unreal first half, like they came back down to earth the last quarter of the season, but they were so hot the first half it was like unbelievable. Like they were like the New England defense was like the best fantasy option most weeks if you weren't a quarterback. It was ridiculous. The Dallas Cowboys were that this year, 185 total fantasy points. Second was the Patriots at 161, 24 points more were the Cowboys. Then you had the Dolphins, the Bills, the Saints, and the Dolphins got me into the playoffs. So hashtag thumbs up. Let's go. You know, I might have to take them based off of like a tip of the cap. But then right after that, outside of the Cowboys, pretty similar when it came to the next group. Patriots 161, Dolphins 155, Bills 150, Saints 145, Bucks 141. Those are your top six. And then it's pretty close. You get down to 12 at the Rams, who are 121, so that's pretty significant. But between that 2 and 7 spot, you weren't missing out too much. How's that order going to be next year, Show? Like, the Cowboys' defense should be great, but it could also not. Like, that's just how fantasy defenses are.
Well, I think people probably would be surprised that Buffalo finished, like, quote-unquote, only at 4, given that they were probably the league's best defense for, like, what, the entire year, basically, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it just goes to show that you're the best real-life, quote-unquote, real-life defenses don't all, I mean, still Buffalo was top 4 defense, so you're not complaining if you had the Bills defense in the fantasy playoffs or what have you. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, having the best defense in real life doesn't always translate to being the best defense in fantasy, just because fantasy football often rewards, like, you know, like picks or pick sixes or fumble recoveries for touchdowns or as we often forget, the special teams part of DST, which, you know, returning punts and kickoff returns for touchdowns and so on, right? And the Dallas defense did do that a little bit this year. I don't think there were too many Buffalo returns for touchdowns on special teams or defense. They had a ton of fourth down stops and tons of tackle for losses. They were phenomenal this year. I'm not saying otherwise. It's just kind of funny to think that, like you were saying, that doesn't always translate. Like, remember there was a year, much like you were saying, two seasons ago, the Patriots defense was by far and away, it was like having another RB2 on your team. There was a season, I think it might have been the year before that, where the Philadelphia Eagles defense was, it was like the same thing for the Eagles, because it was like in every single game, they returned something for a touchdown. It was like an interception for a touchdown, or a fumble recovery for a touchdown, or a punt. It was like, you know, they had trick plays or a punt return for a touchdown or whatever, right? And it just kept on happening. Like, it happened for like almost the entire season, happened at least once or twice a game. And it was, they were regularly finishing in the 20s in terms of points scored per game. It was wild, right? So, you know, that kind of stuff, you can never predict. Like, that, it's not quite random, but there's no way you could pick up on that with like 100% certainty. So you're probably just picking the best defenses in quote unquote real life and hoping for the best, essentially.
Well, that was, you're right, Joe. That was with the Bills. The fantasy knock on them was that they didn't make those splash plays of returning for touchdowns, interceptions. You know, you want to get those teams that make those flashy plays, which a lot of that can depend on just who you're playing, situation, a bit of luck, positioning, you know, like you could have how many times I can't remember exactly, but there's how many times the Bills were like a corner dropped a ball that could have been a pick six, you know? Well, if you play that game again, he probably catches that as an interception and returns it, or at least gets the INT for your fantasy team. So there's so many little factors, but what you want to be doing is looking at the team. Okay, who did who did what last year and track maybe over a couple years. And of course, free agency and draft makes changes to that. But which teams make the most splash plays? Because you could have the best overall defense like we saw with the Bills, but the Cowboys made more splash plays, maybe more sacks, interceptions, returns, all that type of thing. So you have to sort of map that. But to your point, again, it comes down to that is, if not the last pick in your draft, it's the second last pick.
Yeah. You know what I love doing, Andy, for defenses? I like to, when we get to the last round of the draft, I like to open the schedule for week one, and I'll just pick whoever which of the defenses left, I'll just pick whoever has the best week one matchup, and then I usually just stream defenses. Yeah, I'll just do that every week.
Like, what I try to do is, I had the Bills, in one of my leagues, I had the Bills defense, so I had them for most weeks.
Right.
But then, you know, if you're on the bye, whatever, then I made they were struggling a bit, and I made that switch to Miami in the fantasy playoffs. And you sort of keep that as, I always want sort of a base and one I feel comfortable with, but I'm with you. I'm fine streaming here and there, you know, just see what the best matchup is.
Yeah, look, I think I have no problem rostering two defenses when you get like to the end of the regular season and you're looking ahead to the playoffs and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to make the playoffs now. So, you know, the Patriots have this team in week 15 and then the Saints have this team in week 17. So you're going to stash them and hope that it pays off down the road. I have no problem with that. That is a perfectly legitimate fantasy strategy. But in like week two, you shouldn't be carrying two defenses.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, don't do that.
No.
That's a waste of a roster spot. Carry someone else that I think will help you, and I think you'll be fine. Before we break here, Andy, I'll just say this. Gord in Bracebridge just texted us a little while ago to say, I love the clip you played from Bull Durham. I'm a teacher. I've actually used the term lollygagger. I will also agree, I am now totally hooked on draft day. I just keep watching
it.
Oh, Gord.
Gord. Yes. Amazing. Fan of the week. Fan of the week, listener of the week is Gord. Where is he from?
Bracebridge,
Santa's Village territory. Took the kids there this past summer. Bracebridge, absolutely. Good for you, Gord. That's awesome.
You take the kids to Santa's Village in the summer?
That's when you go to Santa's Village. You don't go now.
Santa's like hibernating for months.
No, the Santa's Village is it's like what Santa's doing in his off season. And you go, they have roller coasters, they got little, you know, little rides and stuff like that. You got a fairy thing. Yeah, you go see Santa in the off season.
So Santa wearing like a short sleeve Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah. He was wearing like red and white, but he had a short sleeve. The day we went was hot, and you could see the Santa guy was suffering. He was, because you still got to have the beard. He was earning the check that day, the Santa Claus there. Whew. It was a hot one. But yeah, Bracebridge, Santa's territory and the home of our listener of the week, Gord, who has great taste in sports movies. And we have great taste in guests because Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com, is going to join us next. There might not technically be a date for baseball to start, but we know it will at some point. And you got to be ready for your fantasy baseball draft when it does. Nick Pollock is going to join us to help us with some of this, another weird baseball season coming up. What should be your fantasy baseball draft strategy? We'll talk with Nick about that next when the Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of the Fantasy Show kicks off right now across Canada, across the world on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Also, you miss any of the show, you can get us wherever podcasts are found, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Andy McNamara, that's Shaw Ali. Follow us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. We'll get into some quarterback free agent possibilities, where are some landing spots, who's available, who might be available, and what that means to your fantasy football team going into the 2022 season ahead of the combine and ahead of NFL free agency. But we know at some point, we hope, there will be baseball, Show. There will be baseball. The negotiations are not going well between the players and the owners, but we have to hope that baseball does not continue to self-sabotage and gets out of their own way. So we are going to get you ready. We got to be prepared for your fantasy baseball draft, and we bring in Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com, to do just that. Nick, welcome. How you doing?
What is happening? Thank you so much for having me today. And yes, we're going to talk baseball, no football. Get that out of here.
Yeah.
It's all about baseball.
That's right. That's right. Listen, Nick, because we were talking about it earlier in the show, you don't want to be caught flat-footed for your fantasy baseball draft. It's easy to just be like, oh, they're not negotiating. But then when a decision is made, whenever the season comes, however long the season is going to be, you're going to have your fantasy baseball draft pretty quick. So if you can be prepared, you can be ready, you're going to have a step up on the league mates that you ultimately want to beat and rub victory in their faces all season long, right?
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, we have a draft kit ready to go. Whenever that happens, just go to pitchless.com. We got you covered.
Perfect. Exactly. So let's look big picture here, okay? Now, we know there's trends that come and you can track. One I want to start with is the starting pitching side. How important is it to you in a world where we are consistently seeing starters, if you get to five innings as a starter and he's on your fantasy roster, you're wiping your brow in relief. It's becoming rare. How important is it to get one of the few true aces on your staff who might go longer than five innings in a game?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different theories about this. I personally don't find it as the most important thing to do, but I think ultimately you have to know what your strengths are. For me personally, I'm the starting pitching guy, and I have a lot of confidence that in season I can find more starting pitching to help out my roster, so I don't find the necessity to go get your Brandon Woodruff or Walker Buehler. I will say, if you are thinking, yeah, I do need that volume guy, the guy that I really want to depend on the entire year, my favorite one is Sandy Alcantara, who I've seen go as late as the middle of the fourth round, and he's not going to cost you the same amount as Scherzer and Cole and Burns and whatnot, but he's someone who went over 200 innings last year with a strikeout per inning and actually increased that to a 30% strikeout rate in his final 2 months when he introduced an amazing slider over 30% of the time. Amazing stuff. I mean, we're talking upper 90s with an incredible sinker for Sandy Alcantara. You're going to really enjoy watching him pitch. I think he's even going to be better than last year's campaign this year. So if I am finding myself in a situation where I have to get one of those guys, it's probably Sandy Alcantara in the middle, late, or sometimes even fourth round.
So, Nick, if we look to some of those other guys, maybe in the same general price range, let's call it, as Alcantara, you know, you look at the guys like Shane Bieber, or you look at, I don't know, maybe Kevin Gausman now that he's a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, or Robbie Ray now that he's no longer a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Guys like that, like, when you look at the new destinations for Gausman and Ray, do you expect any of those things to change, you know, where maybe what they might cost in a fantasy baseball startup draft?
Yeah, so Kevin Gausman, I'm going to say this, I'm really sorry, but going from San Francisco to Toronto does not help a starting pitcher. You guys should be very excited, though, in Toronto that Gausman is there. There's a lot of discussion right now that Gausman's going to be a lot worse, considering that, you know, your Toronto plays in the AL Beast. It's one of the most unfavorable places to pitch. However, Gausman's stuff last year and in 2020 really took a major step from his previous career. That is a fastball that had an amazing elite strike rate, which is allowing him to set up that deadly splitter. I call it the best splitter in the majors, the most consistent one as well. And I don't think those two things are going to change much. So fine, Oracle Park and that amazing San Francisco situation is gone, but Gausman should still be good. And the same really goes for Robbie Ray, who now goes to Seattle, and Safeco is an amazing place to pitch. And Robbie Ray changed his entire approach at the beginning of last year and did it for 32 starts, where he threw these fastballs in the zone that were really hard to hit with an unbelievably tough-to-hit slider as well. I think that can sustain itself through another year. So I'm in on Robbie Ray, and I think I'm also a little bit more in on Kevin Gausman than other people are.
Okay, that's fair. I'm excited to see where they fall in draft, specifically Gausman, because like you said, yeah, what a phenomenal year he had last season, and he cashed in, so good for him. I am looking forward to that. When you look at a pair of teammates as well, who are probably still in, I don't know, maybe the top 20, I would say, when it comes to pitchers, but Lucas Giolito and Lance Lynn. And Lance Lynn, I think towards the end of the year especially, he was, I think, a part of that that Cy Young conversation, and you know he was injured and he fell off a little bit. Yeah, I understand all that, but are Lynn and Giolito maybe, are they in the same tier? Let's say, I know Pitcher List does tiers of players. Are they in the same tier? Would you say?
Yeah, I actually have Lynn one spot above Lucas Giolito. I have Lynn at 13 and Lucas Giolito at 14. It's kind of funny with Lynn is I think he had a 2-3 ERA until he allowed a blow-up start at the end of September. And it was that good of a season. It was remarkable. Yes, he did miss time, as you mentioned. That did remove him from the Cy Young conversation. But Lance Lynn, it's pretty crazy. He just throws fastballs for the most part. Sometimes a cutter, sometimes another secondary. But he just gets it done with those pitches. The one concern I do have about Lynn that you do need to be cautious about is his pitches per game went down dramatically last year, which allowed him to only go about 5 and change instead of consistently 6 innings for the White Sox. I hope that trend changes and goes back to what we saw in 2020 for Lance Lynn. But there is something to be worried about as he goes up in age and had an injury last year that there might not be as much longevity in his arm. But the ratios and strikeouts are certainly going to be there, and you'll be happy with that. And with Lucas Giolito, he had moments last year where his changeup wasn't there, which is very strange considering that is the pitch for Giolito. But the good news is the slider showed up in a big way, got a lot more strikes than we've seen before, and I think he's going to incorporate that more. And with a more consistent changeup, Giolito can get out of this range of always being about 3.5, 3.6 ERA and maybe could push closer to 3 while, going close to about 175, 180 innings for the White Sox. An amazing place to pitch in the AL Central. You're going to get a lot of wins when you're going against the Twins and the Tigers and Guardians and Royals with that amazing offense in Chicago supporting him. So I'm a fan of both as well. This is what I'm trying to get at, is this is where you can get so many quality guys, where if you focus the early rounds of your draft on hitters instead and don't go for Scherzer, don't go for Wheeler, you can probably cash in on two of these guys in those 6-7 rounds and be really, really well off.
In conversation with Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com, on Twitter, at PitcherList. So, Nick, let's keep with the pitching conversation for a second here. And, all right, we know where, as in traditional fantasy baseball, if we go back, I go all the way back, Nick, before I used to play out of like the Toronto Star, and you'd fill it out manually when I was a kid and mail it in and get those. And back then it was, and up until, maybe even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it was more so you pick your starter, you pick the guys you're going to think who are going to go deep, and then you pick your closer who's going to get you the saves. And that was the fantasy baseball strategy. Well, now with, as we talked about, the starting pitchers going less innings, 4, maybe 5 in your and then you get either rotations or committees of closers. You have a lot more middle relievers that get a lot more work. So how do you navigate that to look at guys who won't necessarily get you saves, won't necessarily be the starter, and maybe not get you wins? How do you navigate that space that is so filled with mid relievers that get over a season some significant innings time but won't necessarily get you those hot big stats of wins or saves?
Yeah, that's really, really hard to do. I think if people can nail that with consistency, you can do super well in your leagues. In general, I either go for the extremes. So that means instead of relying on those middle relievers, and hey, if you want to find that one guy, that Paul Sewald, Jonathan Loaisiga, that go, a good amount of innings and have an amazing set of ratios for you, those will appear every single season. Those will just show up. It's all of a sudden the beginning of May, there's a guy who has allowed one earned run and has struck out, 20 in 15 innings or something. You go, hey, hold on a second, he's kind of good. You can find those mid-season if that's what you're looking for. But when I go back to extremes, it's more about, it's finding those closer guys. You need to get those saves. And then if I am going for a middle reliever type, it's one that I think could turn into a potential starter and really make an impact for my team. Good example of that this year is Aaron Ashby in Milwaukee. We love his stuff. His slider had one of the highest CSW rates of any pitch in the majors last year, which is insanely good. He also throws mid to upper 90s and has a changeup he gets inside the zone all the time. The problem is he's not the fifth starter yet for the Milwaukee Brewers. That's still Adrian Hauser. But when Ashby does make the leap, oh, man, we really think he's going to be doing some great things. So you can get Aaron Ashby as that middle reliever if you want. Get those good ratios and strikeouts, even though it's not as much as a starting pitcher. Those will help you in April. And then when he does become a starter, then you'll really reap the benefits.
Do you think, if we look at other sleepers, maybe, Nick, before we get to some of the positional player stuff, but do you think maybe like Jordan Montgomery out in New York. I know you mentioned Ashby as well, already in Milwaukee. Maybe Gray out in Texas. Like, are there any other names, maybe beyond those ones I've mentioned, that stand out to you as people should be, like, names people should be targeting as sleepers?
Oh man, how much time do you have? Jordan Montgomery, first of all, I'm really excited for him because he has a lot of swings and misses with his curveball and his changeup. The problem is that his fastballs, as a four-seam and a sinker, and his cutter, they're all underwhelming and they get hit way too hard. If Jordan Montgomery is going to take that drastic step forward, it would be because one of those pitches actually don't get crushed. And I don't know if I'm so certain that's going to happen for Jordan Montgomery. You mentioned John Gray. I'm a big fan of John Gray now leaving the Rockies, going into Texas. That's a great call. Fastball-slider combination actually increased his fastball velocity last year, and I think that could be a really good situation where he can blossom in Texas. Another Gray is Josiah Gray in Washington, who was inside of that Max Scherzer and Trey Turner trade last year. He has unreal stuff, two incredible breaking balls and missed a ton of bats. He also has a four-seamer that had double-digit whiffs in a single game last year. Command is a bit of an issue. He's young, but he will get a lot of innings this year in Washington, as they have no one else to turn to, and he could blossom this season. One other name is a name everyone knows but has completely forgotten, and it really amplifies in your 12-teamers, in your 10-teamers, what you should be doing in your draft. And keep in mind, it's not a best ball. When you make your fantasy picks on that draft day, you're not holding on to them for the entire season. Look back at your previous drafts, and you'll realize, wait a second, I didn't keep anyone after the 16th round. So if you have that mentality, you should be taking chances on guys you might be dropping early. And a big one is Steven Strasburg. This is a guy who obviously was an ace for years, and yes, he's battled injuries. However, that's his only negative. If Steven Strasburg is out there with close to the same velocity he had before, Steven Strasburg will be very good for your baseball team. The only reason why he's going late is because we don't know what his situation is with injury. But if you're drafting him in the late rounds, who cares? You're going to be dropping those guys anyway. So definitely be targeting Steven Strasburg in your drafts. And the last one I want to mention is Eric Lauer in Milwaukee. He's the number four there. Increases velocity in both his cutter and his fastball last year in an amazing second half. And I think he can replicate close to that 3.5 ERA. Actually, he had about 3.2 last year. I think he can do some great things in Milwaukee this season.
Love those. We're feverishly taking notes, Nick. In conversation with Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com, on Twitter at PitcherList. And remember, folks, if you missed any of the program, you can get us wherever you get your podcast. Now, Nick, transitioning from pitching to position, the greatest tweener and transition guy is, what are we doing with Shohei Ohtani this year? As the pitcher and as the batter? Because that's the weird, unique, that's the unicorn, right? Where are we looking at him in individual? Because you can have two Ohtanis on your team, technically.
Oh, right. So if you're in a daily league, that is one where you can swap in Shohei Ohtani as one player in between either a hitter or a pitcher, he should be 1-1 in all of your leagues. That's just goes without saying, the value of getting that good of a hitter plus pitching whenever you want it like that is just insane. Yeah. Now, if he's going as two separate players, I am personally staying away. And the reason for this is, well, I have to be the pessimist, and it stinks because all I want is for Ohtani to win the MVP every single year. But we need to be realistic that he pitched and started all year last year. He didn't go on the IL at all. And for a guy that we were really concerned about that coming in and then had Tommy John, and then the Angels were being very, well, you know, he didn't start more than 130 innings last year because they wanted to give him extra rest. It's very optimistic to think that he's going to go a full season again. And I think last year what we saw from 130 innings is the cap of what we're going to see for Ohtani the pitcher. And that's great. That's wonderful. But I generally don't like to pay that premium for guys who just had their absolute peaks. If you're just getting Ohtani the starter, I also want to let you know, only 23 starts last year, and you will be ripping your hair out trying to figure out when he gets them, because the Angels are going to say, hey, I know we had Ohtani going on Thursday, but it's Tuesday, and we think, we're just going to skip him this week. It's going to be maddening the entire season. We call those a hipster. That is a headache-inducing starting pitcher that stifles the entire roster. It's frustrating.
I like that
a lot, actually. Yeah, Otani is a unicorn-like talent, and I'm sure we're going to be discussing his presence in the MVP race for years and years to come. But yeah, I think trying to guess whatever he starts on a pitching basis, and you know, trying to forecast like two start pitchers and having, you know, for a week, and trying to have Otani in there, Nick, it's not easy to do. So if anyone out there listening can do that with any degree of regularity, I encourage you to text in, because I would love to get in on that. Nick, before we let you go, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about two of the more popular fantasy baseball players, at least here in Toronto: Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. Now, when you look at Vladdy Jr. and Bo, I know the pitcherless staff recently did a dynasty startup draft. I know you weren't part of that, so I won't ask you specifics. But when you look at the places of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, both in redraft and dynasty leagues, are they still similarly high? Maybe a top 5 pick for Vladdy, a top 15, 20 pick for Bo. Is that where the ballpark is for these two Blue Jays?
No, that sounds exactly right. I mean, we all knew that Vlad Jr. was going to be an elite talent before he fully broke out last year. There was that disappointment a little bit when he first came up in 2019. He was good, but he wasn't this, you know, superstar, same in 2020. And we're, you know, super happy, of course, that he slugged 48 home runs last year. There's a little bit of a question for both Bo and Vlad. One, is Marcus Semien's departure going to affect that lineup at all? Is there someone else who's going to slot in maybe to make sure that the lineup still is able to produce as many runs as it was last year? And the second is, of course, well, if you're not in Dunedin, if you're not in Buffalo and you're only in Toronto, Toronto's not a bad hitter's park, but it's not the same as those other fields that really amplified offense. So there is a slight understanding that we should be expecting a little bit of an appreciation of their numbers this year. But for the long haul, I mean, both of these guys are supreme talents, especially in fantasy, where you want dual threat guys like Bo Bichette at a premium position at shortstop. I'm even looking at this year and I'm seeing, oh no, okay, there's Tatis, there's Trey Turner, and then there's Bo Bichette. If I'm at the beginning of my draft, I have them 1, 2, 3. Because I do not want to go and hunting for shortstops outside of those guys. Do you want to trust Francisco Lindor? Tim Anderson's good, but he's going at such a premium. It gets really tough. What about Trevor Story? How is he going to land? We don't know. And to get Bo Bichette in that still great Toronto lineup, I think you're going to be happy with him for years. And seriously, Vlad Juniors, we all know his skills are just insane. Like, I'm so jealous that you guys get to root for him. So it's going to be amazing for years to come.
It really is. What a breakout. And hopefully Major League Baseball players, owners sort themselves out and we get the season, however it's going to look, underway, or at least know when it is going to begin sooner than later. Nick, great stuff, man. Let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll give them a call to make sure that they can get a deal done pretty soon. I'll do that.
Please do. Absolutely. You know what, Nick? Thank you. That's very selfless of you. Thank
you.
Anytime. All right.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We'll see you, buddy. There he is, Nick Pollock, founder of PitcherList.com on Twitter, at PitcherList. Great fantasy tool for you to go through for ranking, setup, and all that. I really like how the website is laid out there, show. And like you said, look, we get it's great in Toronto for, well, Canada, really. All the listeners get to see, hear Vladdy Jr., Bo Bichette, and really this Toronto lineup. There's a lot of questions, though, going in. Like, George Springer, right, was a popular fantasy pickup, but was frustratingly in and out of the lineup with injuries all year long.
Yeah, look, George Springer, whenever they announce that, spring training is going to start, even if it's an abbreviated spring training or whenever the regular season is going to start, whatever it is, right, they need to wrap him in bubble wrap between now and then. Even if it means he starts the season a little rusty, he needs to start the year completely healthy, right? I think, like, I don't know how many times in his career, he's had a decently long career, right, being one of the better players in baseball. He has played, I think, 162, I think just once only once in the last, like, 6 years or something like that. So I think I would very much like for him to be healthy this year, because as we saw, when he is healthy, he is one of the most dangerous hitters, dare I say, in the sport. So I need to see George Springer healthy. I expect more good things from Bo Bichette and certainly from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I wonder about that, the second and third base positions, right? Because no more Marcus Semien. We know he's off the Texas right. now. And does that mean that Kevin Biggio is going to be the everyday second baseman? He had a wretched year last year. If that's the case, I don't know how good I would feel about that. Although we know the ceiling is can be decently high for Biggio. It's just, you know, was that a one-off? Is it more? Can he be more consistent? I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. Yeah. Right. And then who's at third base? Is it going to be Santiago Espinal? I don't know if he. I like Espinal a lot. Is he capable of being an everyday third baseman? Maybe. He has a great glove, and we always knew that was going to be a part of what he brought to, you know, the Blue Jays and the Major League roster. He's fantastic. But, I mean, you know, is there going to be a trade for Jose Ramirez, right? Is Freddie Freeman going to sign with the Blue Jays, and he's going to go at first and move Vladdy to third? There's so many more question marks specifically about how that second and third base spot are going to play out. And I think more than anything, they also need to get some kind of left-handed bat into the lineup at somewhere, right? Like the lineup was so good last year, and it was mostly, if not entirely, right-handed bats. So something needs to change there, but it's crazy because we're not going to see any of those changes until the lockout ends, basically.
Well, yeah, and you're right. You need a lefty bat. I like Espinal more as a utility guy. Like I love him as that extra. You know, I think as that fill-in, rest day, injury, whatever, like as that rover type, absolutely love it. I think if you're the Jays and you're looking at the division you're in and where you think you should go, and by all accounts, this front office is in, hey, let's go for it type of mode, you got to do better. You have to. And that might be with Biggio at second, might be with Espinal at third. Maybe it's, okay, yeah, you go get via trade or a free agent signing a star type third baseman, and then you live with Biggio at second, right? You have to have, you can't have an all-star lineup all across the board. So maybe it's that. And then the pitching side, Joe, it's really tricky. Where do we see the likes of Alek Manoah make improvements, right? Nate Pearson, who for my autographed jersey patch rookie card.
I knew you're going to bring that up.
Really hope Big Nate comes back a little bit. Come on, Nate. Get that fastball going, baby. Come on. Maybe as a closer. I don't care. Get him in the majors. But imagine if you have him make some sort of contribution. You have young controllable arms in Manoah and Pearson who can be wild card type of guys. So that pitching side is really up there as well as far as what you do, how the starting rotation looks, and then the reliever in that bullpen. That's for many teams as well. That's always a wild card because really, show if you're like a mid reliever, typically, you know, you were not at a level strong enough to be a starter or at a level strong enough to be a closer, which is why you are in the middle. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, the Blue Jays had so many injuries last year, Andy, in the bullpen, right? Like just a never ending parade of injuries. My God. It felt like, honestly, remember when there were some points in like May and so on last season when Tyler Chatwood was like continually being trotted out and everyone, like you'd see Montoya he'd pick up the phone in the dugout and he'd be like, all right, bring someone out from the pen. You're like, who's it going to be? And then you hear Ben or you see Dan Shulman. They're like, and it's Tyler Chatwood. And you're like, oh, okay, here we go again.
Here we go.
Everyone collectively sighs, right? It just
like Major League. Instead of get me Vaughn, get me Chatwood.
right.
Not quite the same.
Man. No, I don't know. I just that I the bullpen usage in baseball, period, has changed over the last couple of seasons, right? Like, I think pitchers are throwing harder, but they're throwing not as many pitches. And you have all these different specialists for all these different types of situations. And that's how you work, you know, you rely on guys. And, you know, I think we can expect to see more exciting things from the guys like Jordan Romano or whomever. But yeah, I think the bullpen is going to be so interesting. The starting rotation, actually, I actually think it's in good shape, right? It's Gausman, Berríos. Who else? Ryu and Manoah. Those are the four guys. And then that fifth spot, I have a feeling it's going to be Nate Pearson, Andy. Honestly, I do think.
Come on now. Yes.
I think he reinvents him, not reinvents himself, but I think he retakes his spot as a starting pitcher. And he's like that in that five spot. Maybe he even overtakes Ryu based on how the last season went for Ryu.
He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah,
That's it.
But hey, if Pearson is that fifth, five spot, I think many people in Blue Jays across Toronto, across Canada will be very happy, and you will be as well for your baseball card.
And I will be popping that up on eBay post haste as soon as he has a great start. $1,000. Let's go. All right. That was a good, baseball.
You're a DJ for those cards.
Absolutely,
Andy.
I have an Alec Manoa signed rookie card as well, so I'm rooting for both.
Okay, there you go. When did you buy that?
No though? Patch though.
When did you get that one?
Manoa, I got it. I think right after he had his first really good outing. I was like, ooh, I'm gonna jump on this bandwagon. I got him, so I'm gonna be holding. I'm bullish on Manoa a long time. I'm gonna hold on Manoa for a little while. Right. My Daniel Jones patch rookie card that I got for the Giants.
It's still time.
PSA 9. Less bullish. Less bullish on that one. We're speaking of quarterbacks. We're going to talk about the quarterback carousel that could be happening via the trade market, via free agency. It could get absolutely nuts with what the quarterback situation looks like. Totally transform the NFL possibly for next year. And what does that mean for your fantasy football team? We're going to look at that when we return to the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're cruising on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara, Show Ali, Twitter. Get us, follow us at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. You miss any of it, make sure you don't miss a moment by downloading The Fantasy Show, putting it in your rotation wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google Play. I'm sure there's others. Napster. Napster still around, Show? No? Napster's gone?
LimeWire. All that stuff.
LimeWire. Napster was the best. Oh, the free music before everything caught on. This is awesome. I don't never have to buy a CD again.
I'm surprised they haven't made a movie. A big time movie. You know how they did The Social Network? I'm surprised there's no Social Network about Napster.
Yeah. And just the whole music scene, how that all changed, right? That really was the start of the decline of buying CDs and stuff like that, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we're onto something, Show.
Pen.
Napster documentary starring me and you.
Great.
Nathaniel Napster, whoever founded it.
great.
Nat Napster, we'll call it. It'd be great. All right. We had a great chat with Nick Pollock going over some fantasy baseball draft strategy. But with NFL, we know it never sleeps, Show. The combine is still, oh, baby. Yes, it's starting on Tuesday. The NFL Network coverage starts on Thursday. We get to see, I'm going to have my notebook out, Show, all my pages of notes for fantasy draft possibilities of all these rookies. But then free agency and the NFL season starts March 16 at 4 p.m. Eastern. So all of a sudden we're right there. Then you get into free agency. There's franchise and transition tags just coming up before that. Then it's the draft. So it keeps rolling along. So I wanted to look at, there's a great article on SpotTrack.com, which is just such a tremendous resource when it comes to salaries and caps and who's making what and just articles. They had a great article out on 15 NFL quarterback trade candidates. And some are available in free agency. Some are could be traded. And there's a lot of movement here, Show. Two that are starting this thing, Kyler Murray and Matt Ryan. The Kyler Murray situation is so weird because he got somebody in the organization absolutely buried him, and there's always the threat that he's going to go become a baseball player again.
I think I gotta say, of all the people on this list, I'm the least worried about Kyler Murray. You know what I mean? There's certainly some not, I don't want to say troubling trends, but there's certainly some things about, he gets injured. He's smaller in stature, right?
Tiny.
He's a little short, right? The way they use him, I think they need to protect him a little better and maybe just come up with a game plan that doesn't always have him running around trying not to get his head torn off, essentially, right? But I think I do genuinely think the most, this article lists the most likely scenario is he gets like a massive contract. He re-adds all the at Cardinals things to his social medias, and he plays in training camp, mini camp, so on. I totally agree. I think that is the complete likely thing. This is a little spat that probably gets resolved. I don't think there's anything. I really think there's not a lot to this beyond maybe a couple of guys that are disgruntled. But I mean, hey, look, athletes are like these super hyper competitive guys. They're a little different than we are. You know what I mean? Like they're just, that's just how it is, unfortunately.
They're a little differently built. And the question that I always come back to, show whenever I hear any rumor or quarterback trade or move or signing, I always go back to this: what is the team that is losing that franchise quarterback going to do as an alternative? So, if Arizona and Kyler Murray don't like each other anymore, and Arizona, who remember in consecutive drafts spent first round picks on QBs, the fallen on his face Josh Rosen, who's nearly out of the league, and then Kyler Murray, what do they do as an alternative after also acquiring DeAndre Hopkins? Where do you go? There's nobody else, unless you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to trade for Russell Wilson, and you get into some wild situations that way. But there's nothing else. So I'm with you. I think the most likely scenario is he comes back and keeps going. I think we'll continue to see a decline, especially later in seasons as injuries keep mounting up. But I think he's going back. Matt Ryan, you mentioned it earlier in the program show. Matt Ryan is staying in Atlanta because of his ridiculous cap hit. That's incredible, the amount of money it would take to release Matt Ryan this year compared to holding on to him one more year and just kind of running out the clock on him at 36 years old.
Yeah, like that is just a gargantuan amount of money, $48.6 million in cap hit. Now, it's important to note that he's not getting paid $48.6 million. The reason this year's cap hit is so incredibly high is because the Falcons have essentially been kicking the can down the road for years, which is, you know, in order to make the rest of the roster more affordable. Like, I want to say they've been doing this since they were in the Super Bowl. When was that? In 2017 or whatever it was? Like, they just kept on kicking it down the road more and more and more and more. And then here we are. The Piper is must be paid. Andy. At some point, he gets paid. And that year is 2022. $48.6 million for Matt Ryan. I think it's still possible they trade him. I know there's like a little clause saying they would take on a ridiculous cap if they trade him before March 18th. But I think there's like a realistic world. I was just looking it up in the break. There's a world in which Atlanta, with the number 8 overall draft pick, they were 7-10 this year. They have the number 8th overall pick. And there are a couple teams ahead of them that are QB needy, right? Like there's Detroit, there's Houston, maybe, depending on how much you believe in Davis Mills. The Giants have already said they're going to build around Daniel Jones, so maybe they don't take a quarterback. Maybe they do, but let's say they don't for now. And then there's Carolina, who probably will. So beyond Detroit, Houston, and Carolina, Atlanta is the next team there at number 8. So I think it's well within the realm of possibility that the quarterback of the future, or at least of the next 4 years, is on the roster at the draft in April this year, and then Matt Ryan stays for one more season and gets traded by the trade deadline or something like that. I could easily see that happening this season.
Right. You have it, so you don't have to rush in, because the quarterback draft class, and we'll get more into it as the draft approaches, but there's not a Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow type where it's like, oh yeah, this is the guy. This is the franchise guy. There's a lot of, okay, well, he's got the highest floor, lowest ceiling, or he's super raw, but he could be that. It's not a great, a sure thing for quarterbacks. And by sure thing, we mean just guys who are consensus. We know it depends on landing spot and all that. The most likely trade candidates for this year's show for Matt Ryan, to me, would be New Orleans or Tampa Bay, but they're in the same division, so you know that's not happening.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm with you. I think Matt Ryan stays put. Then you look at like Aaron Rodgers, and apparently the conditions between him and the organization are at the friendliest it's been in years. So that means he's probably going to stay. The Russell Wilson bit is odd. It's like, again, there's rumors he'll leave, but if you're Green Bay or you're Seattle show, especially for Green Bay, what do you do? Do you believe in Jordan Love? You drafted him. You drafted him to believe in him. From the one start we saw last year, I don't have any confidence in Jordan Love.
So if you're the Packers and you try to move on from Aaron Rodgers, where are you going with that roster? I think you stick it out. You try to go one more year. Russell Wilson, same type of thing. Had that injury to his finger, and then they never got back on track, and it was weird. You need some changes. But, like, with Seattle, are you moving on from Russell Wilson? Like, I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense either.
I just, when it comes to the Packers, at the very least, I do think that the team that offers Rodgers the most likely, how do I want to put this? Like, the most likely scenario of winning, right? Like, the most, right. The easiest path to winning is the place he's been all along, right? Like, it just, there's no guarantees you move anywhere else. I know the popular landing spot for him is Denver, but I mean, is he really going to okay a trade to Denver and have to play in the same division as Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert twice a year for the next couple of years? Like, given the state of the young AFC quarterbacks, Andy, I feel like there's no real place in the AFC that would guarantee him a trip to the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? So if that's the case, then he might as well just stay in Green Bay for one more season, and then after that you move on if he really feels like he needs to move on. Like you said, relationships there are apparently great, and Devontae Adams probably going to be franchise tagged. So if you want one more year playing with Devontae Adams, mm-hmm. who's your best pal there, then you get that, right? It just makes too much sense at this point for him to not be traded. I wouldn't be shocked if they traded him at the same time, but I just feel like it makes too much sense for him to achieve another similar level of success. You know, even if we know, you know, he's been traditionally less of a postseason quarterback, to say the least, right? But mm-hmm. Russell Wilson, and who knows what's going on with Russ, right? He's the kind of guy I feel like he could okay a trade to, I don't know, the Giants, any other team, right?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't feel like too surprised, but at the same time, I still think he probably, just for the sake of ease, will just stay in Seattle for one more year. And, you know, maybe next season, 2023 season, is when you talk about Russ moving on. Hey, let me ask you this, Andy. Is Russell Wilson a Hall of Famer to you? Is he a Hall of Famer?
I think he's on a path to be. Mm-hmm. I think, and he's still young, and the health with his finger, that's not like he's tearing his ACL all over the place. 33. You gave me a couple more good years. I think I need another, like, real deep playoff run. Maybe not even another Super Bowl, but, like, I need a bit more to make sure. But I'd say he's definitely on the path to it. Like, he's been exceptional, especially early in his career, right? But I need a resurgence. I need, you know, move on from Pete Carroll at some point. I need a little resurgence from Russ. One more run, and then I think I can feel confident.
Okay. I was just curious. We've had the conversation about Stafford and whether or not he's a Hall of Famer, or is he also on the path? And I think maybe the answer is
now
yes, if he keeps it up, right? But yeah, I just wonder, honestly, are Wilson and Stafford similar, or is one clearly on a more direct path? I just, those kind of questions always intrigue me when it comes to quarterbacks, because as we know, QBs get the lion's share of the credit and probably not enough of the blame when things go wrong.
Right. Well, the most interesting quarterback situation to me, and what could set off a chain reaction, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers show. Tampa Bay. You have Bruce Arians is, what, 70 years old? That guy's not interested in a rebuild.
Is he really? Okay.
We talked about, he's old. He's like 60, late 60s at least. He's old for a coach. Yeah, you can be young at heart, show, but you know what I mean.
I agree. Yeah,
But
not
at
you,
that point,
you're old inside and out.
I'm old inside and out. Yes, I was born old and yelling. But it's a case. What I mean is, you're not interested at that age in a rebuild.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
That's right. I am 40. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a roster, are in a position where you get that quarterback spot right, you can keep going. That window for a championship is still open. However, it is not open with your current quarterback situation of Blaine Gabbert and Kyle Trask. There's no way. Impossible. In any possibility, that is your quarterback situation. Impossible. Not happening. So what do you do? We just saw Tampa Bay acquire Tom Brady via free agency 2 years ago, won a Super Bowl. What would a trade for Aaron Rodgers look like? That goes show to an easy division that you can, because the thing is, Aaron Rodgers, you leave that division, that NFC North. If you stay, you're winning the NFC North next year. It's happening. You're winning the NFC North. If you go to the NFC South, and you put Aaron Rodgers on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, guess what? You're winning the NFC South. So you're winning the division in those two situations. Whereas if you go to the AFC West, you might not be winning that division. So I want to know, what does Tampa Bay do? There's in this SpotTrack article, it's something where after June 1st, based on salary stuff, maybe Tom Brady says, I'll come out of retirement and play 1 year for the San Francisco 49ers, his boyhood dream team, put Trey Lance on the back burner one more time, and Jimmy Garoppolo gets switched around in some sort of trade deal. Like that, maybe? But right now, Sho, that's the hot landing spot. Who is going to go to Tampa Bay?
I hope it's, I legitimately hope it's like some, it's like Jared Goff or something. That's what I hope.
Oh,
that's what I hope.
No
it is.
Way.
Just to kill the fantasy value of literally everyone out there. I honestly think, as much as we've talked about all of the various fantasy moves over the course of, certainly at the end of the fantasy football regular season, the playoffs and so on, and we're doing the lookbacks and whatever, I really think that it's going to end up being, we're going to see the QB carousel move by like two spots, and it is going to be some really uninspiring name. It's going to be like Teddy Bridgewater will land in Tampa, or like Sam Darnold, or Jared Goff, or something like, you know what I mean? Just something like that. Something on that level of magnitude will happen, and Rodgers will stay put, Ryan will stay put, Murray will obviously stay put, you know, Brady won't come out of retirement, Wentz will stay put, you know what I mean? That's going to be what happens this year.
Well, it's interesting you say Carson Wentz, because various reports, and who knows, but are saying that Wentz is, like, very likely gone, which again leads me to the question, okay, is Carson Wentz the best quarterback? No, but you still have that familiarity with Frank Reich. He overcame his, somehow again, injuring both ankles at the same time. Still don't know how you do that, but he did. And, all right, well, the end of the season, the team collapsed. Is that all on Carson Wentz? I don't think so. But you have Jonathan Taylor. You got Michael Pittman. You still got a great offensive line. You have a very good defense. You're in a spot to make a playoff run. If you put Carson Wentz more, let's say, in a show a Tennessee Titans type of idea where you are super run focused and you need a quarterback who's not going to mess things up. And I think if you get Carson Wentz comfortable and can keep him upright, you can have that with him, right? Like, I think Carson Wentz can be good enough, because if you don't, again, where do you go? If you bring in a Teddy Bridgewater, is he better? I don't think so. Sam Darnold? I don't think so. Are you trading for Kirk Cousins? That's been new regime in Minnesota. You trading for Kirk Cousins? Is he better than Carson Wentz? I don't know. That's a big question mark in Indianapolis. And then again, like with all these guys, where you look at the fantasy relevance from it, if Tom Brady's gone, what does that do for Mike Evans, Godwin? Is Gronk? Where's Gronk going? Is he retiring? Is he going somewhere else? Right? Like, there's a lot of questions and fantasy implications that come into these quarterback moves.
Well, you know, it's funny with Godwin, too. We don't even know if he's going to return to Tampa Bay, right? Because remember, he tore his ACL,
and
he was a free agent. Like, he's a UFA now, right? He's a UFA right now. So, I mean, he could easily sign with any team. I mean, he's already won a Super Bowl. If Brady's not coming back, then and there's no real plan for a Rodgers or another vet quarterback who's going to for sure get him the ball, then he might as well go to a different team, right? Especially if the ACL injury spooks Tampa Bay a little bit, right? I wish him the best, because he's a phenomenal player, and from all the interviews and stuff, seems like a great guy and so on. But yeah, Chris Godwin, let's say he doesn't return, does that like further push the dominoes of, you know, does a vet quarterback want to come to Tampa Bay if the only real offensive weapon is Mike Evans? If Gronk retires, Godwin is gone. You know what I mean? So like, that's really interesting to me. I think that the Kirk Cousins decision in Minnesota is going to be fascinating too, because I think he might be like the, of all the big names in this article and just in free agency generally speaking, Cousins could easily be extended, or he could easily be given the old bootski, right? Like, he could be gone. Yep. So I think he's fascinating, because Cousins is, I still think he's like a slightly above average quarterback. But at the same time, do the new regime in Minnesota, do they feel that way? Do they want to start their tenure by holding on to one of the more polarizing figures of the past regime? I don't know, right? But if Cousins goes to Tampa Bay, let's say, or if Cousins ends up in Indy and Wentz ends up in Tampa Bay, like, those are all very possible options.
Does Pittsburgh trade for him?
Sure.
Yeah. As a transition type of quarterback. Now, Kirk Cousins, if you just look at statistics, he can be very good. Like, fantasy-wise, again, he's out of the top 12. But, like, real-life-wise, if you look statistically. But, man, when you watch real life, that guy just does not have a killer winning instinct. He just doesn't. He just doesn't. And, you know what? Again, dude was a fourth-round pick, made a ton of money. Good on him. Next life, can I be Kirk Cousins, please? That seems phenomenal. But where does he go? He seems to be at 33, an expensive transition type of quarterback. Now, if you're the Steelers, would you rather Kirk Cousins than blockhead Mason Rudolph? I would say yes. I would say yes. That's probably an upgrade. Where do you fit him in? Derek Carr is another one where I think he'll probably stay with the Raiders, but that's a guy with a losing overall NFL record, but a player that has led multiple comebacks as well. And I think in the right situation, sure, Derek Carr can still be a heck of a quarterback at 30.
Oh, yeah, Derek Carr. I think there are many franchises out there who would take Derek Carr if they had the option.
You know, I think in Cleveland. The right situation, again, does he go, like the Colts, you put Derek Carr in Indianapolis? That looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? But what's the trade? What's the money like? Lots of questions there. So that's a look at the quarterback situation and what that might mean for the upcoming fantasy football season. That'll do it for this week's show, people. So thank you for listening. You miss any of the show, download us wherever you get your podcast. For Santos, for show, I'm Andy. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.